Welcome to Beyond Standards, your source for authentic discussions about the world of teaching. Get ready to explore challenges, share inspiring stories, and discover strategies that will empower you to make a lasting impact on your students. Here are your hosts, who are trying to master the fine art of maintaining their sanity while managing a classroom, Joe Rohrhoff and Jeff Bologna.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 23 of the Beyond Standards podcast, where we cut through the BS and talk about the reality of what it's like to be a teacher. I'm your host, Joe, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and fellow eighth grade teacher, Jeff Bologna. Jeff, how you doing tonight?
Joe, I'm tired, man. We just came back from spring break, and now I feel like I need another break from spring break. I also didn't have a very relaxing spring break due to some unforeseen circumstances, with my personal life, but everything's worked out good. But, I'm like, we had ET today. We had our staff meetings after school, and something has really been bothering me lately. And it's, I know, Joe, we've talked about this a lot, and it's this thing that happens. I'm sure it happens in every school. I'm sure all the teachers that are listening know people in their school who they just get taken advantage of, and they get taken advantage of by other teachers. They get taken advantage of by administrators, and it's solely because they do a really good job, and they get asked to be on a committee and they do a really good job. And then that transitions into, now we need you to do this. And then now we need you to do this. And now we need you to present at our Board of Education meeting and things like that. And it's just unfair when you see like these really, really good teachers who you can clearly tell are getting taken advantage of. And, we work with three or four in our building that do everything. They're on every committee, and I just feel for them. And, it's just something that's just been bothering me because we've been hearing a lot about it lately.
Yeah. Our very first episode of the podcast was about teacher burnout. And one of the things that's come up over and over again is the fact that it's the good teachers, it's the best teachers that are getting burnt out because they are extremely nice and they're really good at what they do. I got really frustrated. We were going to talk about this today. And then our district sends out an email. This was an all staff email because we received this training on restorative practices at the beginning of the year. And it's restorative practice is something I believe in. I think it's something that really can benefit kids. But they sent out an email to staff asking for volunteers to go to an unpaid training for 3 days over the summer. And I'm thinking to myself, you can't even offer some money to have these staff members go to this training, because what the training is, it's a train the trainer thing. So they're going to have these staff members trained so they can train other teachers. Well, our district pays thousands and thousands of dollars to these other trainers that they fly in, yet they're asking teachers to come in on their summer break for no pay. Just so they can have them train other teachers at no cost. And they said, oh, well, maybe we'll have you train them outside of working hours and we'll pay you the instructional rate, which is, I don't even know, like 20 or 30 bucks an hour. Nothing compared to the $100 of hours they pay these other trainers to come and train us. And I know that principals are going to go to those same teachers and ask them to do it. They're going to say, hey, can you do this for us? And I hope that teachers say no. Encourage those teachers. Do not undervalue yourself. If you're not being compensated fairly or paid fairly, don't do it. You don't have to do it.
You nailed it, Joe, because it's going to be the same four teachers. And they'll say something to the effect of, well, if we don't do it, no one's going to do it. Well, then let no one do it until they fix the system, Yeah, and I feel like, gosh, I think we had Kyle Kobe on with us, and one of our topics was all about work-life balance and, these teachers who say yes to everything. It's like they do not have a good work-life balance, or you would think they wouldn't, and it's okay to say no. Right. It's okay to say no. It's your job is to be a teacher. Your job is to educate those 150 students that you see every day. It's not to volunteer for every committee. It's not to volunteer to put in all these extra hours. I don't know. It's just something that was been bothering me because we're seeing it more and more every day. It happens.
Yep. I agree. All right. We ready to move on?
You got it. Let's go.
All right, let's jump into the topic for today's show. And this is an extremely important topic. One of the hardest things I think to do with a teacher, and that is to try to find ways to help improve the lives of your ESL, your 504, and your IEP students. So it's really going to be about helping the kids that need help the most. And we boiled it down to five tips that we're going to give as regular classroom teachers to help connect and help work with 504 IEP and ESL students. And we have a ton of experts at our school that, you know, teachers that deal with these students on the regular basis, and they truly are the experts on it. We're not going to dive deep into any one of these topics today. It's just more of a general topic of helping those students that need it most. And oftentimes those students come in with paperwork and some baggage. So hopefully you walk away from today with some advice, some specific tips or tools that you can take into your classroom to help the students that need it most. We'll jump right in to, like I said, there's going to be five tips, and I'm going to start with number one, and Jeff, you can, you know, jump in and give your thoughts on each of these five tips. But the first one, the first tip I have, we're starting at the very beginning of the school year, and that is be prepared. Be prepared, and we're talking before day one. When you walk in day one, I'll tell you the things I do to be prepared. And I know we have a limited amount of time before school. You get maybe one teacher workday is usually what we get. So you don't have time to read. Teachers walk in with 150 new students is about my average. I know some are a lot more. Elementary might be one classroom full. It might be less, but you know, you're going to have 15, 20, 25, maybe even more students that come in with some paperwork. You don't have time to read through it and memorize it all one day. So my strategy, what I do is I skim it. I skim it before day one. And when I skim it that first time, I am looking for like the most serious things. Those students that I'm going to need to get to know day one, they might be like really serious medical issues or really severe allergies or major, major behavior problems, or maybe a student that's brand new to the country and they're coming from a country that doesn't speak English. Those are going to be the, on a given year for me, it's probably around three kids. It's not that many that fit into those categories. And those are going to be the three kids that I know, like the first day when they walk in or when I'm taking attendance, I'm going to get to know those kids.
That's great advice. You know, for me, Joe, same thing, but, and anybody who knows me knows that I'm very prepared. I come in, you know, well before the start of the school year to get everything set up. But yeah, I do the same thing. I make sure all my IEPs, make sure all my 504s, any ESL students or ELLs that I might have, all their paperwork's printed. I have it organized. And I skim it, but I also look for any of the accommodations that are going to be specific for my class, right? So, you know, there are some that's like math tools and things like that. And I just cross those out because that's nothing that's needed in my class. I make sure I look for anything that is specific to my class. And like you said, you know, great point about the, you know, the big ones that are needed for that first few days of school, right? Because you have to make sure those kids are taken care of right off the bat. But I try to make it a goal of mine. By the end of the first week, I'll have like a spreadsheet with each kid's name on it, what their accommodations are. I print two copies. I put one like in my podium, in a drawer in my podium. I put one in my gradebook binder. That way I can make sure I know, you know, who gets what accommodations, who, when I make my seating charts, who has to sit near the front, things like that. But I try to, like you said, skim it early, but by the end of that first week, when we start getting into more content things, you know, I try to make sure I review it and have it ready to go. So those kids don't slip and fall behind.
Yeah. And the special ed teachers at our school have done an amazing job the past couple years of kind of putting a cheat sheet together for us where they've been dealing with these students for a couple years now. And they know all the accommodations. They have them listed on a spreadsheet. So I can go through that, maybe add a few notes, delete the kids that I don't have, delete the accommodations like the math stuff that I don't need. But it's been super helpful to have a special ed department that has been on top of it, helping us with that.
You know, and I also give our IEP, I read those a little bit more in depth because IEPs tend to provide us with a little more information and details about maybe test scores, what subject area the kids have struggled with. So being a language arts teacher, you know, if I see one that says reading comprehension, they scored in the one percentile and they're reading at a second grade reading level, I make sure I make note of that, right? I make sure I make note of any writing ones that are on there. our 504s are pretty more general with just some accommodations. And they might at the top say, you know, ADHD or diagnosed with this or that. But our IEPs, I look for some of that specific stuff that I know is going to be helpful.
Right. And then just to wrap this thought up, I do go back a week later. Once I know all the kids' names, I said I skim them at first. I go back and, you know, do all those things, make sure now that I know the kid, now I can read more about them. And now I can kind of understand and put a face to all that data that shows up in the 504s and the IEPs. We ready to move to number two?
Let's do it. Number two is an important one.
Our second tip of our five tips to help connect with students with 504s, IEPs, and ESLs is a common sense one: get to know the students. But we are dealing with some students that are maybe some more challenging students, some students that are going to require a little more effort probably to get to know them. And one thing I always try to do is with these students is to have a one-on-one conversation with them. And this is so hard. Everything we're doing, I know your time is limited. Everything is so hard. But these students oftentimes fly under the radar. And I'm thinking in my head right now, specifically ESL students, students that are new to the language. And they often sit in the back and they're quiet. And if they're new to the school, especially, they might not say much for a lot of different reasons socially. And, you know, they don't have the communication. They don't have the language skills yet. But do whatever you can to have a conversation with each one of these kids, get to know their background a little bit. And I know sometimes it is literally for me on an iPad using Google Translate, having a conversation with someone, just asking how they like Meads Mill so far and if there's anything I can do to help them. And I think even if I don't learn much from those conversations, sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I think I've at least presented myself to the students as someone they can come to for help if and when they need it.
You know, Joe, when I was prepping for this and looking over your, you know, your show notes, getting to know the student has been a common theme and thread that has been in probably 90% of these episodes, right?
Agreed.
And like you said, it sounds like it's common sense, but for any new teachers out there, getting to know your students, every single one of them, is probably the most important thing that you can do to have a successful first year of teaching. Experienced teachers, you know, getting to know your students helps have that successful school year. It sets the tone at the beginning of the year. So, you know, when we're talking about our special needs students, our ELLs, and our high achieving students, getting to know them is so important. You know, and it reminded me of a story. I have a student right now. She's in my first hour, and I do one-on-ones with all of my students in the first 2 weeks. I set up an activity that's very self-driven, self-guided activity, and then I sit in my little library corner on our couch in my room, and I have a one-on-one with each kid, and I ask them to tell me something about themselves. I discovered I had an ELL student who was fluent in three languages, and she was learning a fourth, and it was mind-boggling to me. And then I said, all right, well, elaborate on that. And, you know, she was going into all the details of the different languages that she speaks, the countries that she's lived in, and all these other things. And it was just, I was just baffled. And I'm like, okay, this girl's bringing a lot, you know, a lot to the table here. And, you know, and then you meet with some students who are passionate about baseball, for example. So I try to make a connection with that student about baseball and, you know, hoping that, you know, he'll put forth that effort for me a little bit, even though he's, you know, a struggling student or an at-risk student. If he knows that I've taken a genuine interest in his life, things like that, you know, and you just get all these different unique backgrounds from all these different students. So, and like you said, I loved how you said you use an iPad. I'll sit there with a Chromebook open and they'll type something in and then I'll type something back. And then, you know, then we try to talk that way. It is actually a great way to break the ice with the students and help them feel comfortable and feel safe, like you said.
Yeah, I really like your strategy of meeting with all students in those first couple of weeks, just because it's important to try to make sure these students don't feel singled out at the same time. And if you meet with all of them, then that's certainly accomplishes that.
I also was going to add, it's also a good time too. And I will have, like, I'll have their IEP or their 504 with me when I meet with them. And then I'll ask them, hey, you know, I know you have an IEP. What are some things, you know, that I can do for you? What has been successful in the past, you know, last year with your seventh grade ELA teachers? I'll ask them, what do they struggle with the most and those kind of things. And I let them open up a little bit too. Hopefully, you know, they can get honest with me and things like that.
Yeah, and one thing that I always ask if I have students that are new to the country or just ELL students in general, is I'll ask them how much American history they've had, because oftentimes I teach American history and I have students coming into eighth grade. Not only is language a barrier for them, but all their classmates have had, you know, 7 years of American history, or at least bits and pieces of American history for 7 years. And this person is dealing with the language issue and the fact they don't have the same background knowledge, which puts them at a bigger disadvantage. So that helps me down the road when I know how I have to accommodate for this student, what I can do to help them.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's in, you know, my subject area is a little bit different than yours. Cause I'm dealing with more just the language, whereas you have to deal with what kind of background knowledge they even have.
Yep. All right. Ready to jump into number three? Tip number three is to use your resources. There are so many resources out there. I mentioned before that these are the types of students that fly under the radar sometimes. And oftentimes we don't take the time as teachers to reach out to whatever resources are out there. And some of the ones that I put are just obviously the staff in your building. We have our ELL teacher, and we have our special ed teachers at our district or in our school, and they know so much more about these students coming in, and they are so helpful. Do not be afraid to reach out to them. They are a huge resource. I know that seems like common sense, but make sure you reach out to them and reach out to the parents of students as well. Jeff, what are some resources that maybe that you could recommend?
Oh, gosh. You know, you already mentioned the translating, the tablets and the iPads. I co-teach with our ELL teacher. I do both eighth grade and sixth grade with her. And her students get iPads in the morning. Every morning they check them out from the library. And, you know, they're taking pictures of my documents and things like that. Using Google Translate, using all of those tech tools that are out there that are beneficial for all students, obviously, but especially for some of our you know, at-risk students or our struggling students. Google Translate, DiffIt, text-to-speech. As a language arts teacher, audiobooks have become like my best friend. You know, we used to just post them for the IEPs or the 504s, but now we post them for everybody. You know, I have students who don't have a 504 or don't have an IEP or are not ELL that are struggling readers. You know, you'll get their NWEA scores and it's like, wow, audiobooks help. Electronic copies of worksheets, I think, are super important because then they can translate different things. And I also give all of my students options. So if I'm doing like a grammar worksheet, you can either do it online and submit it that way, or you can get an electronic copy and do it online, like I said, or a hard copy if you prefer to do it that way. A lot of the students with 504s and IEPs have those accommodations, like using technology or you know using text to speech or audiobooks. So it's just nice. And then I just offer it up to everybody, because that goes back to that we're not singling out that one student, right? Hey, here's your accommodated worksheet. It's posted for them, or it's, you know, hey, open up your computer and read your audiobook. But I don't want to be the only one doing that. Well, the kid on the other side of the room and the kid over there is doing it as well. So, you know, so those kind of things, if you offer it up to everybody, those types of resources, I think it takes the stigma away from having those accommodations. And then another thing I noted, and I wrote it down on my notes here, it's not technology based, but it's, I think, guided notes. And I know, Joe, I know you've used them in social studies. I use them with all my grammar stuff. I think guided notes, especially for those students, are extremely important, because it helps them. They don't have to write down all the definitions. They just pick up some key terms. Students who struggle with handwriting and things like that, it helps them to follow along and those kind of things. And I'll even offer, you know, I offer those up to some other students too, who I might notice struggle. So all those tools that are technology-based that are important, but also, you know, little things like those guided notes, you know, talking to those teachers and things like that.
I just want to build on one of those tech tools, because I think a lot of them are ones that are out there that everyone's using. But Jeff mentioned DiffIt. If you haven't checked out DiffIt yet to help with students that are struggling in your class, it's an AI tool where you ask it to create a, you know, whatever, you can have it create an article about the Revolutionary War or whatever topic it is, and it will use AI to formulate an article at whatever reading level or grade level you want it to. It will generate questions. You can choose multiple choice questions, open-ended questions. It will generate all that stuff for you at the click of a button. And if, like, when I have a student that is, for whatever reason, behind, like way behind, and maybe at a lower reading level or English, you know, understanding English level, I'll print them out their own article, and it takes minutes. And stuff like that used to take hours to do, and it was just too cumbersome to be practical. And Diffit makes making activities like that and accommodating students, it makes it a lot easier.
You know, and one more thing I want to add with all this stuff is, for teachers out there, especially new teachers, keep in mind sometimes with these students, especially middle school and maybe high school students, some of them might be embarrassed to get these accommodations because maybe they feel like they're less than their fellow classmates and other students their age. So be cognizant of that, right? If you're giving guided notes, you know, I make sure to kind of just walk by and quietly put it on their table or on their desk, or before the bell rings, if they walk by me, I say, hey, here, this is for later in the lesson. One really good thing, you know, our learning management system at Schoology, we are able to create grading groups. So for kids that have accommodated tests, I can assign an accommodated test with, you know, shortened answers or fewer options for the multiple choice that only those students get assigned and the other students get the other one. So it's no one knows if they're, you know, if they're getting a, you know, accommodated one or not. So, you know, just keep that in the back of your mind when you're working with this group of students, because sometimes they might be embarrassed or maybe a little bit ashamed that, you know, they get the shortened assignments and things like that. So just keep that in mind, because you don't want to, you don't want to single out the kids too much or embarrass them unknowingly.
Absolutely. No, that's great. Great advice. Three down, two to go. Let's jump to number four. Number four is to realize that grades might not be the top priority for these students. And there's such an emphasis, overemphasis, in my opinion, on grades, particularly in the district we teach. But I know it's countrywide. I know that's across the country. There's such high stakes test scores and grading. There might be things that are a lot more important besides grades for these students. Put yourself in their shoes. Have some empathy for them. Imagine them in that situation. And Jeff, you just brought up a great example of having empathy for kids, understanding they might be embarrassed by it. And so try to, if you have to give someone an accommodated version of an assignment or a different version, then try to, you know, fly under the radar and do it quietly. Put yourself in their shoes and check in with them. How are they doing socially? How are they doing with their friends? Do they have friends? It might be more important for you to partner these students up with someone than it is to teach them American history or English or whatever class you teach. Like, their social life might be the priority right now, whereas they can get caught up with the academics a little bit later. So just realize that, like, try to realize what these students need and understand that it might not be a 4.0 grade point average or an A on everything.
And, you know, you brought up the how are they doing socially thing. And it just reminds me of a current student that we have that moved here, gosh, a month ago, maybe. And we just were talking about this student at lunch, and someone said, you know, oh, I've seen him starting to talk to more kids. And I know you were able to find him a group for our Washington, D.C. field trip. And, you know, he's starting to come out of his shell a little bit. But that's what that's good educators right there, picking up on things like, hey, I noticed he's actually talking to a bunch of group of kids before school and not just sitting by himself in the hall. And, you know, we had another student who moved here, you know, a month before that. And, you know, he got himself a really good friend that they play chess together all the time. And so it's like, yeah, Taking care of that, you know, that kind of the social aspect of school is super important. And, you know, I also wanted to mention, you know, you said partnering them up or grouping them up with other people. Sometimes group work for these students can be a struggle, right? Because, you know, you put them in a group and the other students be like, I'll just do the work. Right. Yep. I have found, you know, when I group them like that, I give specific tasks like, all right, Joey, this is what you're going to do. Like, this part of the task is yours. The other three students, this is you guys that take care of this. You know, it's not going to impact anybody's grades, but, you know, you give specific tasks to those students. That way they feel like they're part of the group. And they're still being held accountable, which I know we're going to talk about here in a minute. But that, you know, group work can be tough, you know, for ELLs, can be tough for our 504 and IEP students. So making sure I give them specific tasks, like this is what I want you to accomplish today, and your partners will accomplish this kind of thing.
Yeah, and we have an awesome program in our school. It's called the Lynx Program, and it's, you know, it started as something to help students with autism, and it's just grown to help all kinds of students that need help. And it does exactly that. It partners kids up. It puts them, you know, where they'll go once a week and they'll all meet together, and it just gives them a group of friends. It gives everybody, anybody that's in need of this, a group of friends or people to hang out with. And it's done so much for every student involved, whether they're, you know, the target students that we're trying to get to socialize a little bit more, or the other students. Everybody benefits so much from it. It's been such a success at our school. And if there's anything that you can do to get them involved in a group like that, where they're meeting regularly with a group of good kids, that would be very beneficial for them.
Outstanding. Yeah. The Lynx program is amazing. You know, the teachers that have started that, they do a wonderful job.
Yep. All right. Ready to jump on to number five.
Yeah, number five.
Meet the students where they're at. Every student is different, and we know that. And I said at the beginning, I'll say it again, this is not easy. This is extra. It's going to take extra time and attention for teachers, and I know that's a resource we don't have. But with a little extra effort to meet these kids where they're at, doing things like differentiating assignments, creating accommodated tests or study guides, or using some of those tech tools and providing them. Like, don't let these students fly under the radar. You have to go to them. There are exceptions, but they're generally not the students that are going to come up to you and say, "Hey, can you help me with this?" And I know there are teachers out there that take on the perspective of, "Hey, I taught it to them. I was up there in front of the class and I was teaching it, and they didn't listen and they didn't ask for help, and that's on them." I understand that perspective, but at the same time, it's our job to kind of get them to reach their potential. And for certain students, that means you go to them and you reach out to them and do what you have to do to try to get them there.
And my last comment, be sure you still hold these kids accountable. Just because they have an IEP, or just because they have a 504, or just because they're, you know, ELL students, that doesn't mean they can't do the work. If you follow the accommodated plans and you give them those differentiated assignments, hold them accountable. If it says they get two extra days, when those 2 days are up, deduct points like you would for a regular student, right? And I know, you know, I've worked very closely with our special ed team, and, you know, our eighth grade teacher, you know, she's always like, treat these students just like you would the general students. You know, if it says, hey, you get a week extension on your essay, and then start, you know, deducting the points, hold them accountable, right? Just because they have, you know, those accommodations isn't a free ticket to not have to turn work in on time, and not, you know, if they're acting up in class, send them to the office. If they're, you know, if they're being disruptive, take care of it. Just because they have those accommodated plans isn't their free ticket to just kind of slide by and not do the work and not be held accountable. So, you know, you can still have high expectations, because I know, Joe, you have mentioned numerous times holding our students to having high expectations for our students. And these students can still be held to those expectations. They just are held differently because they get those accommodations. Hold them accountable.
Yeah, Jeff, that's exactly right. Because you mentioned that you, like, if you put students in a group, you give them something specific that they have to do. And I'm guilty of doing this sometimes. Sometimes the easy thing to do, because you're stretched so thin as a teacher, is to, hey, put them in a group. You know the other kids are going to pick up the slack for them and just kind of let them be. But I challenge you, don't do that. Hold them accountable for improving and turn them into the best version of themselves that you can.
Absolutely. Well said, Joe.
All right. Any closing thoughts before we wrap up?
My closing thought would be, and you said it right off the bat, this is not easy. And nothing that we do as teachers Nothing that you listeners out there do as teachers and educators is easy. And this is just one more thing that we just, you know, we have to make sure we're taking care of all of our students and, you know, making sure we're paying special attention to the ones that need those, that little help, those little accommodations. So it's not easy to do, but it's so beneficial.
All right. Well, that will do it for today. That's going to wrap it up for this episode. Wherever you're listening to us, whether it's Spotify, iTunes, please give us a like and subscribe and join us next week. We are going to be talking about teachers making that transition from being a teacher to becoming a principal. And I know, Jeff, this is something that you'll be able to provide some insight on. And I'm hoping to get a principal on the show that's made that transition. And we can talk about, I know there's a lot of younger teachers out there, or maybe older teachers too, that are considering that transition into administration. And I would love to hear kind of the thought process of some people that have been through that or are going through that right now. So join us next week for that. This is Joe and Jeff signing off, reminding you to keep going above and beyond those standards. You may not make a lot of money, but you do make a difference.